Imagine a world in which post-traumatic stress no longer robs from the millions who suffer, where spouses, children, communities, and organizations get back the ones they love. Post-traumatic stress is often treated as an illness that can only be curbed, but this is wrong. PTS is an injury that can be healed quickly so that those affected get back to doing what they're meant to do, thrive. Join us as we discuss the latest innovation in the treatment of PTSD, specifically the reconsolidation of traumatic memories, what we refer to as the RTM protocol. We regularly feature guests who have successfully cured PTSD to inspire hope in all those who still struggle, hope in what is possible. This is Life After PTSD.
Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Life After PTSD. It's very exciting to be a part of this podcast and get to talk about developments in the world of PTSD and traumas, and also specifically the RTM protocol. My name is Jeff McLaughlin, here with you as always, and in studio with me, Carrie Russo. Say hello.
Yes, this is Carrie from First Orlando.
This is Carrie. So Carrie, I am super excited today because we have some people on the line. Alan Canerva, why don't you check in for us real quick up there in Ontario? How are things, my friend?
Hey, good morning, Jeff and Carrie. It's a really bright, white, cold day up in Ontario. Thanks for inviting me in.
Hey, man, no problem. Well, today is a special day for us. We have a guest that really is at the heart of all of this, in a sense, and we're going to tell his story today. And so without further ado, Dr. Frank Bork. Frank, hello. How are you?
Good, Jeff. I really appreciate you putting all this together.
That's no problem. No problem. This is helping people, and we are we've got several episodes now under our belt, and so we've become seasoned vets apparently at doing this, even though we've got much to learn. But Frank, we have not had you on the show yet, and you know, so much of what we're talking about here is it stems from your research and your story. And so today we're going to talk about that. We want to hear all about it. And so if you would just as an introduction, just tell us about you, the world that you work in, and maybe just some things leading up to the development of the RTM protocol. Let's not get there quite yet. Just tell us about life before that from you. So it's your turn, man. Let's hear from you.
Okay, good. You got to keep me under control. I tend to go on and on. But I was trained at the Institute of Psychiatry in London as a research scientist. Also taught at Cornell University when I came back here to the States, etc. And this story begins when I went down to New York after 9/11 to help out, and got roped into staying for about 11 months. Because while I was there, I found a protocol that I had picked up in my clinical travels was very, very effective in treating traumatic memories and PTSD. I did the rehabilitation for 900 or so survivors from above the 100th floor of the World Trade Center. And it was pretty heavy work for especially the first 6 months after 9/11. But when I came back, as many of us did, I got the present of a terminal diagnosis of cancer, didn't die, and 2 years later said, when, you know, as oftentimes happens when you go through that kind of a transition, somebody's got to do something with this protocol. And given my background as a research scientist, I put together a not-for-profit, and we have been bringing the protocol through the research and publication scientific grid, which is what is necessary for it to enter widespread use by professionals. We're pretty much through the research phase and have started the training phase, a great deal of thanks to the other fellow on the phone here, Alan Canerva, who has taken the position of director of training, and remarkably, the protocol called Reconsolidation of Traumatic Memories is scientifically remitting diagnosis and the symptoms of PTSD over 90% of the time. And I figured that that's what we get in the research world with the professionals doing the treatment, et cetera. And what's happened is that we're getting near that in observation at this point. We've done about 70 trainees, licensed mental health professionals that we've trained in the protocol. And they appear to be getting, you know, very close results to what we got in the research, which is a real tribute to the training materials that Alan has put together, and the training itself. So we're really excited, Jeff, to be entering a whole new phase. We've got probably 80 to 90,000 recent vets diagnosed with PTSD, and a huge contingent of first responders, corrections officers, etc., with PTSD across the country. And we now have a clinical treatment that's not hyped clinical nonsense, and that is well researched and ordered in an easily trained fashion for clinicians. Treatment protocol that is, in layman's terms, curing PTSD. We can't say that as a scientist, but in layman's terms, this thing is getting rid of the nightmares, flashbacks, directly related emotional problems that go with PTSD. And if you're at all familiar with the area, this is a national problem, especially in the veterans world. So that to have something like this, and I think where all of us are is, while we're excited about it, it really needs to be gotten out. We probably need nationally about 10,000 therapists should be familiar in using this thing tomorrow, given what it does. It's not an accident that there's 22 suicides a day.
Can you tell the story of that moment when you realized you had to get this out? You knew that this was your calling, you had to get this out when you were in at 9/11?
They're catching up to my history, folks. Watch out.
It's fascinating.
Yeah,
Frank,
I shared
hear it.
With Terry when I was down in Orlando that I was in New York for about three months. And the corporations were actually flying me in and out of the city to do the work. And I was flying into Newark, probably it was in October, November. And the pilot took a circle around Manhattan Island. And as I looked down, I could see the smoldering World Trade Center. And in my mind's eye, the thousands of therapists and clients who needed this protocol, this treatment that I had in my briefcase. And there was no way at that point to get it to them. And that's where, I've been, this has been a long haul for me. I've been tempted to quit, and I should have quit probably three or four times over the last 10 years.
But I'm glad you didn't.
That vision of what the city would look like and what other disasters look like without having the benefit of this treatment in practice. That's what's kept me going, is clearly seeing in my mind's eye the need and the efficacy in terms of, I knew what, when I landed that day, I would see four or five clients that very day, who would get their lives back from going through the protocol. And I was doing that in a space where I knew there were 10 or 20,000 other people that same day in the same city who needed the same, and I couldn't get it to them. Is that what you were thinking of, Carrie?
Yes.
Yeah, and Frank, I want to go a little bit further with this. Let me ask you a question. You were treating, way back when, after Ground Zero, or at Ground Zero, I should say, you were treating with what, a preliminary form of the RTM protocol? Or, I mean, how developed was this thing at that point?
Oh, yeah. It was a preliminary form, Jeff. You see, in order to get this thing in both trainable and researchable form, we put together, when I started the not-for-profit, eight experts in the field, and what I would say, refined what I had been doing to the point where it was both it could be researched in a standardized fashion and also trained in a standardized fashion, which is one of the reasons that we're getting the kind of results from the people that we're training that resemble the research results. Mm. This is a clear, concise, behaviorally measurable entity. This is not normal clinical vagary, you know.
It's not just asking how they're feeling.
Alan has broken it down to something like 90 steps. Alan?
Yeah, there's 90. Frank, you're correct.
Yep.
You know, Jeff, for all the listeners, you know, I was a military officer for 10 years, and I was a humanitarian worker for 10 years. And so in those two populations, I saw the cost people were paying for untreated post-traumatic stress. So when I opened up my practice here in Canada, I dedicated myself to helping people overcome post-traumatic stress using some of the predecessors of the RTM protocol that I was aware of. But I spent probably hundreds, perhaps thousands of hours scouring the internet looking for rigorous research so that when I presented in front of first responders or military psychiatrists, psychologists, that I could have something credible in my briefcase. And it wasn't until I found Frank in the Research and Recognition Organization that I actually had that in my hand. Mm. And, you know, the success rate, and through those thousands of hours, I found a lot of protocols, and they had success rates, some, you know, maybe as high as 50 or 60%, but they also had recurrence rates that when you read the longitudinal studies, the recurrence rates were so high. And again, when I found Research and Recognition and Frank and the Reconsolidation of Traumatic Memories protocol, you know, the success rate of over 90% we've replicated in our own clinic here in Canada. And as Frank said, the trainees, the people who have been certified in the protocol, are, you know, Frank's humble, and Carrie can speak to that because, you know, a dozen of her clinicians have now been trained in the protocol, and they're getting extraordinary results.
Yeah, I have 100% success right now. So does Cindy.
God, don't say that. Even if it's true, why? Make it less.
I like that. Undersell it, right? Undersell it.
That's so remarkable.
So this is a question. I mean, any of you can chime in on this, but I would be especially curious to get an answer from Frank or Alan as well. What was being used prior? I mean, give me the picture prior to the RTM protocol and stuff like what was being used, guys? I mean, what was the treatment?
Yeah, I was, forgive me, Alan, I was in on the research when I was in London 50 years ago, which is mostly exposure therapy, which follows the scientific underpinnings of desensitization. Which is essentially presenting the phobic situation over and over and over until the person becomes numb to it, so to speak. And number one, it's unbelievably painful. It only works about 35% of the time. And even when it does work, it generally comes back within a year or two in terms of severe PTSD. Mm. So what's happened in actual practice is the poor practitioners left without any really effective tools are throwing all kinds of drugs, psychopharmacology at the thing, which don't get at the root problem, which essentially oftentimes cause more problems clinically, especially with lots of drugs and different categories put in the same bodies. That just doesn't work. So that up to the point that we published, the generalizations I would make is that the best therapies that were out there, there were five recognized by the AMA, by NREPP, as evidence-based psychotherapies. They work about 35% of the time, and that's conservative, if you know what I mean. A lot of them had 40-50% dropout rates because of the pain of doing the therapy itself, and they oftentimes were not reported, so that the research was not really accurate in terms of how effective it was. So that I think anyone who's read this area or been anywhere close to the practice, I think it's pretty well established in the press as a national problem. And we really have got something significant to put in here that we're morally obliged, in my mind,
Frank, if I may,
to as many people as quickly as possible.
Yeah, if I may, I want to ask you a question on that one, too. First of all, I would agree with that sentiment. I always, from my own perspective, I always thought PTSD was just that enigma. I mean, it was just this thing of, we know it's an issue. How do you treat it and everything? But I think one thing that may surprise people or maybe enlightening to people is a definition of PTSD. And I would love to get yours, any of y'all's perspective on that, because I think it's often limited to, a lot of times I think people can think that's a military issue. And I'm convinced that you guys would say it's far more than that. So for the good of the conversation, could you, somebody, give us a definition of PTSD and what that really entails and who is affected?
I'd give two definitions, Jeff. And I think the first one simplifies it for exactly the reason I think you're asking the question. What the protocol gets at are traumatic memories. That's a memory of something which is installed and unable to be removed, that when it is recalled, it produces the traumatic feelings that went with the original event. So even if you get someone who has been rear-ended in a car accident, and that's one of the ways that I was using the protocol before I went down to 9/11. They would be unable to drive a car like on a highway, if they had an accident on an interstate, or whenever they came to a stop sign, they would be really dangerous the way they were driving, because they would be having flashbacks, etc., or they wouldn't drive at all. So that's a memory of something that's happened that they are having nightmares about, flashbacks about, and that can last for 10, 20, 30 years in terms of dysfunction. With PTSD, the protocol is most applicable to the intrusive symptoms category, which is diagnosed with nightmares, flashbacks, and directly related emotional problems. So that PTSD, number one, you have to have had a life-threatening event, and then the effects are nightmares, flashbacks, intrusive symptoms, or withdrawal, numbing about all of life is one of the pieces in there as well. And the protocol, given the event has been caused by a traumatizing event, the protocol seems to take care of all of the clusters, the elements that categorically define PTSD.
And Jeff, I'd like to jump in. You know, and you're quite right. Because of the media or how we hear about PTSD, it normally circles or surrounds some sort of tragedy. A person commits suicide, or a person takes aggressive action against others, and it's because they have PTSD. When you really start drilling into post-traumatic stress, people who are traumatized in their life, women, there's a number of studies in North America, women have experienced sexual, physical, or emotional trauma. One out of three women, one out of five men have experienced trauma. There was a study in Canada that said that Canadian civilians, 11% of them, will will demonstrate full-on symptoms of PTSD sometime in their life. And so well beyond the population, women are more get diagnosed with post-traumatic stress far more than men. And in fact, poor people experience, in studies, experience post-traumatic stress more than affluent people. And it's like this depression. It's almost like one of those unspoken illnesses. I don't want to call it an illness. You know that about me. Mm-hmm. Because it has the word disorder at the end of it, post-traumatic stress disorder. And as Frank articulated, within the medical community has a very specific diagnosis. And even that stigma of disorder prevents a lot of people who are suffering from speaking out. So it's a very silent ailment in society. There's so many people who just don't speak out about their post-traumatic stress.
And I think that sometimes people don't speak out because they don't even realize they have it. You know, something happened to them as a child, and I'm thinking about a specific client. They're a man that's angry, and they're yelling at their kids and grabbing their wife and being angry. But when you really boil it down, they had a traumatic event when they were really young, and now they've just packed it away, hidden it away. And then when we find that and realize that that's where their anger is stemming from, it can completely change their life. So I think there's things like that that happen too, that people just don't even recognize that that's also a form of PTSD.
And as Frank said, when you look at the conditions for PTSD, you know, it has to be terrorizing, the event has to be terrorizing, has to be life-threatening, and there has to be a sense of helplessness. You imagine a small child, witnessing some horrific event within their own home where they feel helpless, they feel terrorized. And for a child, 5, 6, 4 years old, they may feel it's life-threatening. It may be life-threatening. And then they pack that away and they lead the rest of their life. And as Carrie said, now they're adults and they have behavioral issues.
Guys, are there particular
Hey, Life After PTSD listeners. We're glad that you love other stories of healing, but what about you? First Orlando Counseling is the premier trauma therapy center in Central Florida with a full staff of trained clinicians ready to help you clear your trauma without re-traumatization. Childhood abuse, relationship abuse, a traumatic car accident, birth trauma, first responder or military trauma, even phobias. You don't have to live like this. It's time for you to heal. Schedule a consultation today by visiting firstorlandocounseling.com or call 407-514-4470. It's that easy.
Symptoms of PTSD that are generally kind of more universal that you would say would be good identifiers for someone that actually has it and is struggling with it? Like, what do you see in your work?
Jeff, the intrusive elements, what they call intrusive in the DSM 4 and 5 diagnostic booklets, is flashbacks where you're really reliving the accident or the attack or the life-threatening event, and nightmares, oftentimes very specific. You know, the number of Vietnam guys that I've treated, who've been having a nightmare about something that happened in Vietnam 35, 40, 45 years ago, the same nightmare for 45 years, or a nightmare with the same kind of emotional. In other words, the scene might change, but it's always they're helpless and can't get away from the thing that's happening to them. If, let's say, the way that the person was traumatized, like some of the Vietnam, I remember a guy treated, his first sergeant took his place as in a patrol on the point because he didn't think that that this young man was ready to do that. And he was killed, blown up right in, 7 feet in front of him. He was splattered with his body, Not only did he be traumatized by that in terms of terror and fear, but he was also guilty that it wasn't him who got blown up. So for the 45 years after Vietnam, he was not just having nightmares and hypervigilant, but he was also guilty, a basic guiltiness about just being alive. And when those things are associated to the original event, the protocol also gets rid of those, which is just marvelous when it happens. Does that answer your question, Jeff?
It absolutely does. And so maybe a follow-up question to that, what are you seeing as results, or what are like typical results? What can somebody expect on the other side? And I think you and Carrie, any of you guys can answer this. This is your world. So tell me that.
Well, I'll give you a really quickie. That's probably 50% of the time after I administered the protocol to someone who's had severe problems for any length of time, the way that I test that, in fact, the protocol has worked, I'll ask them to tell me about the event that traumatized them. And I do that also at the front end to make sure that they have real physiological reaction to the event, and they have the terror feelings associated with it. Well, I ask them that at the front end, and they generally break down very quickly, start to cry or shake, or they can't talk about it. And that's all I need to know at the front end. But at the end of the treatment, I ask them the same question. Could you tell me about the event, the thing that happened to you? And they'll start telling me the story. Well, I was in Vietnam, and I was walking up, and my first sergeant had taken. And they'll stop about there and look up at me and shake and stutter like that, and then say, you know, I haven't been able to talk about this for 40 years. What have you done to me? Essentially, what they're saying is that the neurological connection between the memory and the feelings has been broken. They didn't know it was happening when we were doing the protocol. Neurological uncoupling is unconscious how it works. But when they get done with the protocol, they come back and say, we have slept for 10 hours, a full or 8 hours. I've never slept more than 3 hours a night for the last 20 years. And I can feel such a difference in me that you get when the problem is that severe, you get those kinds of stories afterwards. Literally within an hour of doing the protocol, and then sleep patterns change, and their family comes back and says, wow, this guy's really different. He's more relaxed. He's enjoying life. All of those things. And those are also well recorded in the research that we did. We didn't just do the scientific tests pre and post of PTSD. We also asked about nightmares, flashbacks, and the effect in their lives for the people around them. If you look on our website, you'll see 50 or 100 testimonials, probably half of which say, this thing gave me back my life. I was trapped in an alternative kind of living because of the PTSD, the symptoms, the traumatic memory, and I'm now free of that.
And I'm sitting here thinking about the other therapists out there that might be listening, and because there are some other memory reconsolidation treatments out there. I'm actually trained in all of them because I was looking for an answer. And so I think that it's important to understand that this is very quick. It's profound. Clients who have done other memory reconsolidation techniques with me have said this was easier and more profound. And I got the same kind of look that, like, what did you do to me? I've never told that story. So I just think it's important to understand that there's a lot of things out there. And as therapists, we hear about, oh, this is the next greatest thing. This is the best. This really is.
Yeah, and what I would add to that, Carrie, is that if you as a counselor go to a research expert and ask them to look at the actual studies, we now have 5 published studies, scientifically well-grounded. They are the the largest number and the highest level of remission for diagnosis and symptoms that there is in the scientific literature. So that my comment would be, where RTM is at this point is the most evidence-based, objectively measured, so that when I say this thing works 90% of the time, it's not anecdotal, it's not my opinion. Huh? It's been reviewed by a IRB, by an independent review board of the research, and by a group of my peers that looked at it and published it in a peer-reviewed scientific journal. So that from an objective perspective, for the moment, this is it. Now, there may be other things that come along, but right now, what we have is as sound from an evidence-based objective scientific as there is out there.
Right. So what you're saying is, by all accounts, research, anecdotal, all accounts, this is a true innovation in therapy. I mean, just that, the progressive innovation.
Yeah. Let me close there, if I might, Carrie, because since we started doing the training, which is only now, 6 months old, I have been absolutely blown away by the response of the counselors that we've trained, who are coming back and saying in simple terms, thank you for making the thing available, and boy, this really is working the way that you are talking about it, and we want to not just use it, but help you, so that the project itself is getting probably twice the energy to go forward that it had 9 months ago, and it's coming from the people that the counselors, the professionals who've been trained.
Well, and maybe
like
you could
yourself,
speak,
Carrie.
Maybe you could speak just really quickly to the I know you have to go, but the connection between you and Alan, since Alan is the one training these people and getting this result. I think that's an important piece.
Absolutely. In some of my trainings, I wrote the training program for New York State for mental health trainees, aides who work in the state hospitals. And when I got to New York State, they were just given a jacket and put on the floor and told that they would be the main contact for people in state hospitals and mental hospitals. And I wrote a set of materials for them to help them do their job, so that I adapted programmed learning to clinical learning. And Alan and I sat down last spring and started to write the training manuals for this from that framework, which is very different kind of training. It's not anecdotal, it's not generalizations, it's behaviorally specific and competency based. So at each of the elements, let's call rapport is one of the first things that's done. So we teach it, and then we test it that the trainees can actually do what we're describing in rapport, and it's not a generalization. It has very specific elements, so that you go through the thing element by element and then put them all together in a way that's behaviorally tested for competency. And the beauty in working with Alan, is that from his previous work, he understood all of that and added to it in a fashion that I think the training manuals are among the highest order of effectiveness in this clinical training field in the world. And we actually have the RAND Corporation going to do some research, not just on the training manuals and our use of them, but on
how effective the counselors that we train are in administering it in terms of clinical remission of PTSD, the symptoms, and so forth. And a huge portion of that is to Alan's credit in terms of not just having developed the manuals, but also how he puts it together in front of a classroom. And we'll be using his materials, and he's developing a training program for trainers in the same vein, which we need to have done in the next few months as well. I couldn't just sing his praises any louder in terms of what he's done and what he's doing with the training for the project.
You still there, Alan?
I'm still here.
He's basking in his praises. That's what it is.
Yes, sir.
Alan, maybe this is. Let's close the show out with this. Why don't you give us a heads up? What are you excited about for the coming days with RTM? Like, say, over the next couple of months, and then maybe even a year or two or something. What are you hopeful for? What are you looking forward to with all of this? Give me a shout on that.
Well, what really makes me excited is that we all know somebody with PTSD. There's just no doubt about it. Every one of us knows it. And the big problem is that, you know, it's been projected as an illness. We now know that it's an injury that can be healed at a very high rate. And Frank doesn't use the word healed. He uses more medical scientific terms, you know, remit the symptoms of. But we know the success rate we have. And this body of people that Frank spoke about, the thousands and tens of thousands of people suffering with post-traumatic stress, they're not doing what they're meant to do. You know, their families suffer, communities suffer, everybody suffers. And so, you know, what am I excited about? You know, I sit and I fantasize about a world, Jeff, that 12 months from now, you know, there's four training teams, and we've quadrupled our training tempo, and we're getting to that magic number really quickly that Frank said, 10,000 counselors trained across North America, and each of those counselors are working with up to 100 people a year. We're literally affecting the lives of 100,000 people, and because of the protocol, you know, those people can be relieved of their symptoms of PTSD in literally three 90-minute sessions or four 90-minute sessions. And that's the unique place we find ourselves in. And that's what excites me. The next 3 years, you know, meeting the Carries of the world and seeing the passion that she brings to her work and how her staff bring their passion and how when they get on board, they get on board. And people like, you know, Dan, who I know you've interviewed a number of times from 22-0. And so, you know, I'm just passionate. And you can hear Frank's commitment. You can hear Carrie's commitment. And I'm that's what excites me. It is the next 3 years. And yeah, it's just going to be an exciting journey. And I can't say enough about it. And I'm so thankful. I'm so grateful for having met Frank and for Frank's work in the RTM.
Frank, are you excited that people are taking this work and they're joining with you on the journey and running with this? Does that get you excited?
The relief, Jeff, in terms of imagine yourself having invented penicillin or found penicillin, and being able to get it to mothers and fathers with, you know, kids who are dying of infections. This is a blessing for someone like myself. That's hard to come. I mean, we look like heroes from the outside. From the inside, we couldn't be more blessed in a lifetime to be able to have this kind of a gift to pass on and help with. I can't say it more simply than that, Jeff.
That's a great analogy. Well, guys, thanks for joining us on the show. Cheers to both of you. I know it's cold up there. We're suffering here in Florida in our 50-degree weather, but looking forward to seeing you guys soon. And if you're out there looking to connect with any of these guys, you can find us on social media at HealYourPTSD. And in just a second with a close, we'll tell you the websites where to go. Guys, have a great day, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks for joining us for Life After PTSD. As you listen to this podcast, imagine your new life and all the possibilities when you are free of PTSD, because that is what is possible with RTM. You are here, which means you're ready. So connect with us at lifeafterptsd.org or in Canada, lifeafterptsd.com. heal.ca or follow us at Heal Your PTSD.